guys, and welcome to episode 197 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I've got on psychotherapist John Hirschfield. John specializes in OCD, and I'm sure you're familiar with his work. He's been on the podcast several times, and he's written many books about OCD. And I wanted to get him on in particular to talk about existential themed OCD. So in this, John goes into what is existential themed OCD, what are some of the common obsessions and compulsions with this theme, exposure and response prevention therapy for this particular theme, whether ERP is as effective as with other themes, and how families can help someone with this particular theme. And then we go into much, much more, words of hope and the other usual questions. So I enjoyed this episode. This particular theme is not something that's been talked about much on this show before, so hopefully it helps you. And without further ado, here he is. On the podcast today, I have John Hirschfield. John is a psychotherapist who specializes in the treatment of obsessive compulsive disorder. He's also the author of 4 OCD books. Welcome back to the podcast, John.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Good. It's good to, it is 4, right? 4 books. Got that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So before we get into today's topic, it'd just be good to get an update on you. You can share or answer that in any way you want.
5th book is basically my update. I've been working on a teen workbook for OCD. Nice. Sort of takes a lot of the concepts for the mindfulness workbook for OCD, which also concurrently I've been working on a second edition of that, which should come out sometime next year. Some updates. And then I'm excited about the teen workbook, in addition to it being kind of an audience I haven't really written directly to much yet. Also invited Sean Shinnock to join me in illustrating the book.
Oh, that's so brilliant.
It should have some like really cool monsters in it, so I'm excited to disturb some people's parents. that's what I'm in it for. So that's what, in addition to my my ongoing clinical work in the center here in Baltimore, just writing away.
Cool. Well, yeah, I look forward to seeing that, and that's great for Sean as well. Cool. All right. So today we're here to talk about existential OCD. So I don't want to say a rarer theme, but one that at least doesn't get talked about that much. So initially, yeah, what is existential OCD?
Well, it's interesting that you pointed that out. It doesn't get talked about that much, and I think it's because it's so often missed as OCD, because what it actually is something that I think the average person might say they, using the word colloquially, quote unquote obsess about. So existential OCD really just refers to any sort of obsession involving an intense focus on why are we here, what is reality, what is the scope of the universe, what's my role in it. What's the meaning of it all? And these are, like any obsessions, they're sort of natural human things that people concern themselves with. So it's not the content that's at issue, it's the process. What's different about existential OCD is that the questions are in and of themselves unanswerable by default. They're designed to be unanswerable. So you might have a debate in your head about whether or not you're going to get sick from touching a doorknob, and you might have to deal with the uncertainty about the germs on your hands. But the germs are a concrete phenomenon. They either do or don't exist. And there's some level of understanding that, maybe if you wash your hands, you have some expectation that you'll get somehow closer to an answer. There's something contained about it.
Yeah.
And with existential themes, they're meant to remain completely uncontained. That's the whole point of them, is to not know for sure. So it's really a struggle of tolerating uncertainty about the nature of uncertainty. So it often gets misdiagnosed as just, being philosophical and neurotic and all the other things that we think of ourselves as being. Yeah. What really makes it OCD is, of course, when it's an obsession, meaning you're constantly or frequently being bombarded by these unwanted intrusive thoughts about the meaning of life, not because you're really into that stuff, but because that's what your brain has chosen to bombard you with. And then compulsions, any variety of things you might do to try to get the answer. And I think, really what makes it the disorder is the impairment that this can cause, the intensity with which you will sacrifice joy to try to get that answer, because the feeling is that you need that answer, as opposed to, wouldn't it be neat if I had that answer?
Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you for that. And how I don't say how common is it, but is it rare or not rare to come across people with this theme?
I haven't personally found it to be all that rare or all that common. It's somewhere in the middle. A lot of people I've seen kind of pass it along their tour. You know, some of us, we have this kind of like world tour of OCD. We go from one theme to the next, and hopefully we learn something, you know, with each obsession that we target. So I've certainly seen a lot of people where they start out with one obsession and they work through it, and the way they work through it is really kind of softening their clinging to identity. Mm. You know, I am a this, I am a that. And when they've learned to sort of let go of that a little bit, then the OCD can't say, oh, no, you're not, you're this or that. The problem is sometimes that can then stir up further existential quandaries, like, well, what does it mean if I don't have an identity then? And if I don't cling so hard to it, you know, am I just sort of floating in aimlessly in the universe? But I've also seen clients come in where that's definitely, you know, not a product of them learning to accept uncertainty. It's just their target obsession. They saw, you know, an episode of a TV show, or they read something in a book, and it just kind of, their OCD just kind of grabbed onto it and said, this is the thing. Until you've answered this question, you're not allowed to experience joy on earth. Your job is to get the answer to this question. And it's awful because, you know, like I said before, you know, none of these questions are really answerable, but this question is unanswerable by design.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so what are some of the, I mean, you mentioned a few, but what are some of the common compulsions and obsessions that would go along with this theme?
So, I mean, I think the most common one is, you know, what is the meaning of life, essentially? Mm. What is the purpose of life? Sometimes this is related to religious scrupulosity and obsessive concern that if I don't really believe in my faith, or if I don't really understand my faith, then maybe I'm missing something, and either I'll be punished in the afterlife, or maybe there's not an afterlife and I've been believing in one all this time and I'm not being authentic. So sometimes it manifests as just this, why am I here sort of question. And I've also seen it connect to harm OCD. If I don't have a perfect understanding of why I'm here, then maybe I'm here for no reason. And since life is challenging, what's to stop me from hurting myself then? Right? Yeah. If I don't have this purpose behind me. So it's sort of a tag team OCD. And the other form that I see come up is not so much a question about meaning, but a question about what is real versus what is not real. You know, how do I know this is my hand? How do I know I'm really alive? What does it mean to be conscious? What is this person that's staring back at me in the mirror? You know, how do I know that that's really me? And, you know, these are themes that, of course, humans have struggled with as long as they've struggled, right? Yeah. And that's why they're so often the subject of films and books and things like that. You know, to some extent, you're supposed to get a little frustrated with it. Mm-hmm. It's just not supposed to take over your life.
Yeah, that's a good point, because philosophical questions, existential questions, yeah, by nature are tough because you're grappling with something that science hasn't answered yet, faith hasn't necessarily answered yet, and they're tough for most people, but yeah, you throw OCD into that and I can imagine it becomes excruciating. So what are some of the compulsions? So you're having these existential worries, what would I do to kind of try and lower that anxiety?
So like every other form of OCD, the compulsions are strategies to get more certain about the unwanted thought. With this particular kind of OCD, the primary strategy is going to be a mental ritual of some kind. It's going to be just ruminating over it, trying to get the answers. And this is where it can be very tricky to catch. It's why it's so easily misdiagnosed, is it looks on the surface like just philosophizing, like you're just thinking about what it is to be a human, which is not in and of itself problematic behavior in the same way you might see somebody, you know, really, you know, going to town on their hands because of their germ phobia and they're washing up to their elbows and something like that. You'd say, okay, well, that looks like a behavior that's compulsive. But if you see somebody who's just spending a lot of time lost in thought trying to define the word is, you might not catch that as an overt, as a clear behavior. So there's definitely all of the certainty seeking that goes on in the mind. And then there's bringing other people into the mix, asking reassurance seeking questions from your family or your partner, religion hopping, you know, going from different spiritual advisors in different faiths, trying to find the right one, lots and lots of reading about philosophy and things like that. And again, we're not talking about philosophers. We're talking about people who, unburdened by this obsession, would very much prefer to just go watch television and, you know, but they've just been given this task and they're not allowed to rest and be happy in the present moment until they've completed this task. So a lot of mental review, a lot of reassurance and data collection, a lot of Google hunting, very similar to health anxiety. You're trying to sort of crack the code on what's going on inside. You'd see a lot of avoidance, of course, of triggering things. So there might be programs, nature programs, science programs, things like that, that the person might not want to see because it might make their existential fears worse. Okay. Also very common.
Cool. No, thank you for that list. I can imagine people have probably signed up for philosophy degrees before.
Yeah.
As a compulsion, an expensive compulsion.
I often wonder how many people are in professions that sort of started as, you know, attempts to get certainty about something, and then they realized, you know, they quite like it. And maybe the OCD wasn't so bad that it kept them from actually functioning in that profession.
Yeah. okay, cool. So what are some of the example ERP exercises you've done with clients or you would do?
So the, you know, any kind of treatment for OCD is going to be aimed at this very same thing, which is understanding that there's a trigger, there's a thing that makes you go from being at peace to being in distress. And then there's a space where you're experiencing that distress. And then there's a compulsion, which is your strategy for getting rid of that distress. And what we want to do in ERP is we want to create that space. You know, a lot of times people say, well, why should I go do exposures? If I'm already, my whole life is an exposure, I'm already being bombarded by it. And the answer is you're spending your whole life on the defense, right? We want to go on the offense. We want to actually create change in the brain. So we want to know that we created this trigger, that we invited this trigger, we walked into this trigger willingly. And then when we feel the body saying, run away, get away from it, do your compulsions, make it stop, then we can say, no, I'm actually going to sit here and learn how to feel this. And in the case of existential OCD, it's really to learn how to not know something, right? That's a skill, to not know something. And it's a really, really hard skill to develop because our whole lives were trained in the opposite direction, right? If you don't know the answer, look it up. If you don't know something, you should know it. And we get very little input about, well, what if you don't know something and you just want to leave it alone? Like, how do you tolerate that? So with ERP, we can practice that. So how do we do it for existential OCD? So we want to look at things that are going to make you feel uncertain about the nature of existence, the nature of the universe, whatever your target content is. We want to bring that up. And there's lots of different ways to bring it up. So, and this is going to vary from person to person. So I've worked with clients where it was very easy to bring it up with watching certain movies or listening to podcasts. Mindfulness podcasts can sometimes be very triggering for people, especially if they go into any of the philosophical stuff about self and no self and things like that. Atheist podcasts, you know, they sort of talk about, you know, the Big Bang and, you know, evolution and things like that might be triggering for some people. And lots of different movies, you know, where the theme is something like, you know, maybe you're just a brain in a jar and all of this is fake, you know, like The Matrix. Or movies about the sort of emptiness of life and pointlessness of it all. Like, I don't know if you've seen the film Melancholia. I always try to get my clients to watch that depressing film because it's such good exposure therapy. What are some other things? Obviously, scripting plays a large role here, So you have to be careful. The scripting isn't there to philosophize. It isn't there to try to figure out the answer. It's more you would be writing imaginal exposure scripts describing how your failure to get the answer. So it might start with something like, you know, life has no meaning, or I may not be real, or the world may not be real. It might be a construct of my imagination. And then go on to describe how not being able to refute that or make sense of that or resolve that means that you remain obsessed and suffer indefinitely. That's the exposure. That's what you're trying to get away from, right? That's really what the OCD is saying, is if you want to experience joy on earth, you have to pass this test. And of course, the test is rigged. So what we're saying is, like, take the exposure, make the exposure the test, and then choose not to pass it. Choose to sit with it and to open up to it and to not get reassurance and to not figure it out, but to say, oh, this is what it feels like to not know. I want to be really, really good at not knowing. Because, you know, you can see other people out there who know even more than you about this, and they don't seem all that upset. You know, how is Neil deGrasse Tyson just walking around having lunch? You know, why isn't he with his head in his hands freaking out all the time? Because he seems to have some understanding of what's going on. And so then it raises the question of, you know, what am I doing differently in the way that I approach this content, in the way that my OCD pushes me to approach this content?
Yeah, I like that. And the way you set up ERP. Okay, so I'm sure some people are wondering, especially if they're affected by this theme, or they're probably wondering, is ERP going to be as effective for existential OCD as it is for, say, contamination OCD, or harm OCD, or religious OCD, or relationship OCD?
Yeah, I think so. I think also I like to think of these types of obsessions that really have to do with getting your head straight, you know, getting your head locked into, like, oh, this is how it's supposed to be. You know, it could be about sexuality. It could be about how you feel about violent thoughts. It could be about this subject. These are really just contaminants of the mind. You know, you're basically saying, I would feel clean mentally and at peace if I had the answer to this question. But now I have this thought in my head that I've decided doesn't belong there, and I'm trying to get rid of it, but I'm failing. So it's being more and more intrusive the more I try to get rid of it. This is very much the same as any kind of contamination. That's just a philosophical contamination. Somehow you were okay until you realized maybe you weren't okay. And then you've been scrubbing your mind ever since with these mental rituals and avoidance and reassurance seeking. So if you just understand it in that format, that it's really just a form of mental contamination, then I think that would inform the kinds of ERP that you do, right? How do I get dirty and resist washing then? So I can learn to tolerate that uncertainty. And it should move along just like any of the other obsessions. I suspect that if you can get on top of existential OCD, it probably helps inoculate you from other obsessions as they come up. Because there is a certain, I know we say that it's all the same, and I do genuinely believe that, but there's like a little bit of a footnote at the bottom of existential OCD that says, yeah, but this is a big one, you know? This is about the meaning of all things. So if you can win a showdown with that, it might help you with other themes that come up, because you might recognize how those other themes are really just another play on the words of, I can't be happy unless I have certainty about this, or I'm not going to be my true self unless I get certainty about that. It's really the same stuff with different words.
Yeah, good point. Okay, cool. So how, and this may be similar to other themes, but how can families help their loved ones who are struggling with this particular theme?
I think the mistake that families make the most frequently, perfectly understandable why, is they try to help get the answer, right? So it could be talking about any kind of OCD, and this would be the case where it's like, well, you're not really this, or you're not really that, or I would know if you were this or that, is what the parent is likely to say, or the partner's likely to say. With the existential questions, they might be trying to say, look, you know, obviously life has meaning because of this, or you would know you're real because, you know, you touch my hand, you can feel my hand is real. Why would you be feeling that if this was all a dream? Trying to help run these tests and basically co-compulse. what would be better is if everybody understood what was going on, right? If they learned about OCD and the role that OCD was playing in their lives, and the person suffering with the OCD could contract with the person who's trying to help them out to deny them reassurance compassionately, to not accommodate them. And in the case of something like this that's so focused on mental rituals, it might just be bringing someone back to the present moment. Mm. You know, you're trying to hang out with somebody and you just kind of see the light go from their eyes and you see that they're in their head trying to go like, oh, what if this and that? What about this? What about that? And to have a partner who can kind of just, you know, snap their fingers and say, hey, come back to me, you know, just, you know, without having to go into any other detail, what they're really saying is, I see that you're struggling. I see that you're doing compulsion. Let go of that and bring your attention back to me. And they might feel very uncomfortable doing that, but that's actually what they need to get better. They need to develop the capacity to be in it and then drop it, right? To be contaminated and then pivot and act like you're not dirty, right? Yeah. To have this existential quandary and then say, oh, well, and then, you know, go back to watching Top Chef Junior or something, you know, whatever you were doing before you got distracted.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. The example you gave at the end there about the partner kind of being able to kind of click their fingers, and that's kind of a I don't want to say a wake up, but it reminds me of meditation, of when you notice your mind wandering and you catch it and just bring it back to the present moment. It's kind of like using an external point of reference or person to help you do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the exact same process. And you know, I talk about mindfulness a lot, and we've spoken about mindfulness a lot together. It makes sense that you're really trying to exercise that same part of your brain that recognizes when it's gone off on a task and the task is not appropriate to the scene. You know, when you're meditating, you're saying, hey, I'm going to put my attention on this thing, the anchor, the feeling of my body sitting or the feeling of my body breathing. This is where I'm choosing to put my attention. And I know that my attention will shift and wander because that's what the mind does. And I'm just going to notice when that happens. And then I'm going to return my attention to the anchor because that's what I came here to do. Or maybe I'll look at where my mind wandered for a little bit and just kind of, you know, rest my attention on that until it fades away and then come back. But I'm not going to get into problem solving and analysis. I'm not here to change anything. So the same is true in exposure therapy, where we're bringing on the discomforting idea and we're just watching it unfold without fiddling with it and trying to make it better. Yeah. If you have somebody on the outside who can also help you do that, who can also help you wake up and realize that you've wandered off, that you've gone off in a dream and you're not actually present with your family. Whether or not there's meaning in the world, I think we can all agree. We can all agree that to be present with the people that you care about, it's like, you know, it's pretty cool. It's like, it's worth the price of admission. If that's all you get, and it might not even be real, I think you should take it. You know, I mean, and it's amazing how OCD bullies us and cons us into sacrificing these things like we're going to get them back later, you know?
Mm. Yeah, really, really good point. Okay, so what should someone do if they think they have this particular theme of OCD?
Well, obviously the first thing you should do if you can do it would be to find somebody who is trained in treating OCD with ERP. You're not going to – somebody who truly specializes in OCD. I get this question a lot, you know, can you help me find somebody who specializes in harm OCD or HOCD or something like that? And in our community, sure, there are things we kind of enjoy treating more than others, but I don't really think there is such a thing as a specialist in one kind of content.
Yeah.
So you don't need to find somebody who has a ton of experience with existential OCD. If they're treating OCD at all, they will have come across existential OCD. And, you know, maybe they really like treating it, maybe they don't. I enjoy it because, again, I think it's kind of fun and exciting to philosophize. And also, there's something sort of liberating about having a sense of humor about things like, you know, most of our existence on this planet, you know, the planet's filled with, like, I don't know, giant flying lizards or something like this, and there's just this, like, tiny part where we just showed up and started complaining, you know. These are interesting things to think about, but only if you can approach it with a light attitude and know that when you're done thinking about it, you can go shift and think about something else. That's when it's not an obsession.
Yeah.
So get CBT from an OCD therapist is the short answer to your question. And if you can't do that, try to find some online support. There's lots of blogs out there. There's some good online ERP tools out there now. And then also there's a few books that I may or may not have written that are also out there. And I did put a chapter on existential OCD in the second edition of the Mindfulness Workbook. So you should be seeing that sometime next year, I believe.
Oh, cool. All right, great. Well, I'll put links in the show notes anyway to your existing books. So then just general question for those listening with OCD, what words of hope would you have for them?
I think everybody is out there underestimating their abilities. And I think we're conditioned to do that because we're conditioned to be afraid of pride or the sort of Greek tragic hubris. We're afraid of standing tall with our head held high and our shoulders back, as Shala nicely puts it. We're afraid of feeling that good and then suddenly being informed that we're really foolish for being happy because actually everything is awful. So we hold ourselves back. You know, we stand on the second rung of the ladder when we could absolutely climb to a much higher rung. We're just afraid that falling from that higher rung is going to be worse than falling from that second rung. And I think that when the ladder is positioned in a moat full of alligators and snakes, it doesn't really matter what rung you fall from, so you should just keep climbing. And what I mean by that is you're not doing yourself any favors limiting yourself of the potential joy just on the chance that your OCD is right and you're wrong. It's not going to hurt any less. And the way to really, really fight OCD is to insist on living a fulfilling and joyful life.
Yeah, good point. So I know I've asked you what advice you'd give your 20-year-old self before. So I'm going to ask you, what advice would you give your 30-year-old self?
Slow down. Don't take yourself so seriously. Be patient. And I think you're ready to stop eating fast food. I think that's
cool.
It.
Cool. I definitely asked you this one before, but I'll ask it again. You've got a billboard. What do you want written on that billboard?
Got me the billboard question again. I'm going to go with it's going to be okay. Yeah. I don't have anything groundbreaking yet. I should have come in prepared with the billboard question. Next time, yeah. I'm going to have a series of billboards for you. But I think it would be nice to be driving down the freeway and see a giant billboard that just says it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And then finally, just anything else that you wish you could have said today, either on this topic or anything else?
Anything else that I wish I could have said today, right at the end of the session? Nothing exactly is coming to mind. I think just sort of going over, you know, what we just discussed, just remembering that, you know, having unwanted intrusive thoughts, being distressed by them, using certainty-seeking behaviors to try to clean yourself of these thoughts and then getting stuck in that loop, that's the definition of OCD. And so don't get thrown by the idea that your OCD is different or that we don't have like a cool name for your OCD or something like that. It's in the end, it's never really about the content anyway. It's always about the process. And these thoughts are normal thoughts. I mean, nobody's ever come into my office and told me they're afraid of something that I think they shouldn't be afraid of at all. It's just being afraid of it shouldn't take up that much of their life. Nobody wants to get sick. Nobody wants to be in existential crisis or really what I think people with existential OCD are really afraid of is just never being able to let it go and just watching their life pass them by constantly thinking about the same thing over and over again. Yeah. Nobody wants that. So it's not about the thing that you don't want. It's about how you're relating to the possibility that that thing could come true and how much time and energy and joy it's taking away from you.
Yeah.
So you're stronger than you know, and the treatment is out there, and you're going to be okay.
Good. Well, look, thank you for your time and for talking about this particular flavor of OCD.
I think it's great that you're putting together all these podcasts and covering all the different themes, because I know that people who listen to your show, they find themselves in your discussions and then they feel less alone. And I think, that's my next billboard. You're not alone.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And until next time.
Bye, Stu.
So there you have it. Thanks a lot to John for his time and talking about this particular theme. And a quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.